When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up the mountain, and after he sat down, his disciples came to him, and then he began to speak, and he taught them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven, and blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted, and blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth, and blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled, and blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. And blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account." The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
A long time ago, I led a day-long retreat with a rabbi. This is back on the West Coast. And we led this retreat on the theme of forgiveness from a Jewish and Christian perspective. And I learned something from my rabbi colleague. I preached a sermon on forgiveness. He told a story. And then he asked the congregation, "What do you think about that?" So I tried to do all this scholarship, and he just told a story. And he engaged the folks. So I'm taking a tip from my rabbi friend today as I tell you the story of Jacob and Esau and Isaac and Rebecca. Wendell Berry once said, "Telling a story is like reaching into a granary full of wheat and pulling out a handful. There's always more to be told." Once upon a time, there was a man named Isaac. And Isaac was getting up in years, and his eyes were getting bleary. He was getting hard. He was having kind of difficulty seeing. And he also had this preoccupation with dying. He thought he might die soon. So he called to his son Esau. He said, "Esau," and Esau came and said, "Here I am. Esau, I'd like you to take your quiver and your bow and your arrows and your gear and go out into the field and hunt some game and bring it back here and make for me a meal that I love, and I will solemnly bless you." And so Esau went out to hunt down this game. Meanwhile, Isaac's wife overheard this, Rebecca, and Rebecca ran to the younger son, Jacob, and said, "Jacob, you're never going to guess what I just heard. I heard your father talking to Esau, and your father said to Esau, go out into the field, hunt some game, bring it back, prepare a meal, and I will bless you, but that's not going to happen. See, I want you to go out into the yard there and bring back to me two kids, goats, not kids, bring back two goats, and I will prepare a meal for your father, the one that he loves, so that he will bless you and not your other brother, Esau." And Jacob said, "What if I get caught?" That was his moral dilemma. He could have said a lot of other things, but he said, "What if I get caught? And besides that, my brother is hairy, and I am smooth of skin. My brother is hairy, and I am smooth of skin, and if I get caught, my father is going to curse me rather than bless me." And Rebecca's mom said, "Just listen to me. I'll take the blame if this doesn't work out. As for you, just do what I say. Go out in the front yard, get those kids, and bring them back to me." So that's what Jacob did. Jacob went out, brought the goats back to his mom. His mom butchered the goats, made this beautiful and sumptuous meals. And then Rebecca strapped the skins of the goats onto Jacob's arms, the furry side up, and on his neck, and then also gave him to wear one of Esau's coats or cloaks, all right? And then she said, "Now go to your father and ask for the blessing." So Jacob went to his father And he said, Father. And Isaac said, Here I am. He said, Well, I'm here. I'm Esau. I brought to you your meal so that I can get the blessing. And Isaac said, That was kind of fast. How did you do that? And Jacob said, Well, I'm lucky. You know, I'm lucky. And Isaac said, But you know, your voice sounds like Jacob. I don't know. Come here. Come closer. And so Jacob came closer, and Isaac grabbed him and felt his arms. They felt hairy. He felt his neck. He smelled like Esau. Must be Esau. Your voice sounds like Jacob, but you smell and you feel like Esau, so I will give you the blessing. And Isaac said to Jacob, From the dew of heaven, from the fat of the earth, from the grain and the drink of the earth, I will bless you, and your brothers will bow down to you, kings will bow down to you, and those who curse you, they will be cursed, and those who bless you, those will be blessed. And just as Isaac finished saying these words, and Jacob left the room, Esau came in, holding this meal, and said to Isaac, Here I am, I brought the meal, I'm ready to be blessed. And Isaac said, Who are you? And he said, I'm Esau. I've come with the meal, your favorite meal, so that I can be blessed. And Isaac said, But then who was that? There's someone I just blessed. And Esau said, I know who that was. That was my little brother. That was Jacob. And Isaac said, You know, I blessed him. And Isaac said, and Esau said to his father, Is there any blessing left over for me? And Isaac said, No. In fact, I just told your little brother that he would lord over you, that you would bow down to him. And Esau raised his hands to heaven and said, Father, upon your death and in the time of mourning, I will kill Jacob. I'll wait till you die, and people are sorry, but then it's over for him. I'm going to kill him. And Rebecca, who seems to overhear everything in this story, overheard this and ran to Jacob and said, You'll never know what your father just said. Your brother is going to kill you. Run for your life. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
I realize some of you stumbled over thanks be to God on that ending there. You know. It's kind of like the search for the associate pastor. I'm leaving them hanging, just like you did, Mon. All right. Let's have a word of prayer. Gracious God, we thank you for stories, that there's always something more to be told about these stories. We've heard this story, but there's something more in it for us, something that touches our stories. So help us to wrestle a bit with this story about blessings and someone who missed out on a blessing and someone who stole it. And let the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts here be acceptable in your sight, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. This is a great and familiar. How many of you know this story from the Old Testament? Some of you, yeah, sure. Everybody. Maybe you're just telling, you remember this from your own family. Maybe something happened. A little sibling rivalry in there. It's a great story. It is a story, obviously, I've kind of reiterated this, about someone who steals a blessing from someone else and seemingly gets away with it for a little while. It's a story about someone who wants something so badly they are willing to deceive another family member or deceive someone else. Doesn't matter, they're going to deceive them in order to get it. It's that important to them. When I read the story, it reminded me of something that happened to me easily over 25 years ago when I was a pastor in California. I remember I was asked to do a memorial service. this older man had died, but the adult children lived all over the country. And so they were flying in from Arizona and Maine and Boston and New York. No one lived near their dad in California, where I was a pastor. So I remember going to this house, their father's house, and sitting with these adult children who lived so far away from their dad. And I remember it just felt like this quiet awkwardness at the very beginning. No one was saying anything until one of the sons said to me, "Well, we just had a curious experience. When we arrived, there was a woman in the driveway. She was the caretaker of our dad, and she came up to us and handed us a card and said, 'Call my lawyer.'" Thus, the son went on to say that a newly minted will had been written up, and all the children had been written out of it, and he had bequeathed his entire estate to her. Look at Isaac. His eyes are failing. He's probably lying down in bed all day. He is susceptible to something like this. He's susceptible. He hears the voice of Jacob, but it smells like and it feels like Esau. And somehow in this confusion, without consulting anyone, without waiting a day, that's a good idea, or sleeping on it, that's another good idea, he decides in the moment, in isolation, to give it away to someone he's uncertain about. He just goes ahead with it. The Hebrew around this story, around this solemn blessing, is kind of interesting. You have to know that the language basically infers that this blessing comes out of Isaac's soul. It comes out of his nefesh, his life and his breath. So for Isaac, it is almost like he is breathing his last breath and his life onto someone else that they might carry on. That's how important it is. And my sense is, if it's that important, he could have waited, right? Could have discerned a little bit more. But even what is maybe more troubling for us is that he can't tell the difference between his two sons. They're twins, if you know them, Jacob and Esau. But he should know the difference, right? And then there's poor Esau, depicted as hairy for eternity. He's a bit brutish, he's thick-headed, he's stereotyped. He doesn't deserve this. He deserves some blessing, right? He deserves some morsel of a blessing, but apparently in Old Testament theology, it's all gone. The blessing was intended for him, and yet once again, Esau has been usurped by his younger brother, his conniving younger brother. There's bad blood in this relationship. Upon their birth, it's true, Esau came first, and then a few minutes later, on his heels, came Jacob, who up to that point has been living up to the meaning of the name Jacob, which means heel grabber. And he has been grabbing Esau's heels and tripping him up all his life. It's just one more instance. I'm sure Esau obviously is upset. That's just one more instance where his younger brother has gone behind his back, that deceiver, that prankster, that heel grabber. And then what about the mother, Rebecca? You know, aren't mothers wonderful? She knows what's going on. She overhears things. You know, every mother to me has a little bit of larceny in her. Just a little bit. My mother does. You know, I remember attending my grandmother's memorial service in Idaho one time. It was my dad's mother, Grandma Henry. And when I got to the memorial service, I forgot my black socks. So my mother, being Rebecca-ish, of course, went into my father's suitcase and grabbed the only black socks he had brought to the service. So and she gave them to her son, of course, the younger son. And so during the memorial, I still remember my dad looking, you know, wearing this suit and tie and so forth. But at the cuffs, he had these white socks on. He even said to me, "You know, I could have sworn I put those in." A little larceny in every mother. Just like Rebecca, my mom was just looking out for her youngest. And then we have to ask, what's so valuable about this blessing? I mean, Jacob goes on to steal it. He deceives Isaac. He deceives, you know, Esau. What's so important about this blessing? I mean, what is it? If I bless you and I don't bless you, am I going to jail? If I decide to bless this child over this child, it may be bad parenting. If I show favoritism to this child over this child, I'm not going to go to prison for being a bad parent. What's the big deal about this blessing? In Old Testament theology, the understanding of being blessed by God or another person was based on the idea that if you bless someone, you were somehow speaking something into existence. You were speaking a reality, a future reality about that person. You were giving them an advantage. I want us to think about a blessing like a commencement speech at graduation. The commencement speaker gets up and offers these words of wisdom to graduates going out into the world, and he or she offers them, hopefully, to imprint something on them. So as they go out to find jobs and out into the world, they can remember something about that blessing. Blessings are kind of like commencement speeches. Blessings are kind of like a letter of recommendation that we might give to someone. We give them a letter of recommendation that they might get a job or go a little further in life. It might be something like putting in a good word for someone. We put in a good word for you in hope that you have a bright future. The idea here is that blessings are spoken with the intent of putting something into existence, of making it a reality. It goes back to Genesis chapter 1. God spoke, "Let there be light," and there was light. God spoke, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered," and the waters gathered. God spoke, "Let the earth yield its seed, and let the earth bring forth plants and every kind of tree and bearing fruit," and it was so. So you get a sense here in the Old Testament that what is spoken comes into being. It becomes possible. It becomes real. Like offering a marriage blessing which articulates for two people a future filled with love and hope and abundance, God speaks creation into existence as a blessing for humanity. But there's trouble. There's trouble. Maybe some of you are picking that up. I mean, what do we do with this story? I mean, to me, Jacob is the last person in the world that deserves a blessing. Does he deserve a blessing? He might be qualified for it, but he stole it. Maybe he didn't break any laws, but he took something that was intended for someone else. Sure, he got what he wanted. He got an advantage over his brother. He got his father's letter of recommendation, the only letter his father could write. He's got it in his pocket here to go out and face the world. Sure, Jacob, the heel grabber, got some favoritism, became the favored one. But here's my question. At what cost? At what price? To me, this story comes down to this. We can create opportunity for ourselves. We can stack things in our favor. We can even pay someone to do something for us. We can fool people by dazzling them with our charm, and they may never know the wiser. We can burn down our relationships in order to get something we want, some advantage. But then the real question is, can you live with yourself? Can you live with yourself? You know, a lot of sermons, I have this one quote. I think it's from John Wooden, legendary basketball coach. But this quote is attributed to a lot of different people, so I don't know who said it first. The quote is, "The true test of a person is not what they do in public, but what they do when no one's watching." Can you live with yourself? You know, you have a choice. Jacob had a choice. We always have a choice. Just like the front of the bulletin there says. There's a nice little quote you can go home and ponder about. Philip Pullman says, "It's like having to make a choice, a blessing or a curse. The one thing you cannot do is choose neither." It's a choice. Maybe the story is put up here for us to kind of ponder this dysfunctional family and their decisions, but then it also asks us about our decisions and how we treat one another with honesty and integrity. It's a choice. A few weeks ago, Heather and I were coming back from a trip. We were somewhere between Wilmington and Baltimore. We were on a toll road, obviously. There's several, it's expensive to go on a vacation. And you never know how much you're gonna pay at the toll plaza. Anyway, only when you get there, right? So we were in a traffic snarl coming home, and we were getting in line for the toll plaza. You know, I realized there's a lot of road rage out there. I saw a lot of gestures out there. A lot of evil looks, honking horns. It was kind of a madhouse getting home. So anyway, we're pulling up to the toll plaza, which means we're getting in line for the toll plaza, getting behind, which was very, very long, a long line of cars, and we're in this line. We're going 2 miles an hour, slowly making our way. We were just about up to the front when a large SUV zipped up and just nosed in ahead of us. Don't you hate that? It was a good thing Heather was driving. I don't know what I would have done. She's just nicer than I am. She pulled off a little, you know, let him in. You know, people get upset. They start honking their horns. He just noses his way in. And then he kind of pays and he goes on. And then we pull up and Heather pulls out her $4 and hands it over. And the collector said, don't worry about it. He paid for it. And you know what I said to Heather? I want to do that. Don't you want to do that? When everybody's honking their horns and there's gas fumes and people are mad and angry, suddenly a blessing. An unexpected, not for the people behind us. They didn't get that. But we did. I guess we got a little favoritism in there. Don't you want to do that? That when you receive, and I guess my thought out of that story is that when you receive the blessing, it is inherent upon us to pay it forward. That's also a definition of a blessing. Still, it's a choice, right? It's a choice.